Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com, DebatePhysics.com also, but, yeah, can't debate with new debaters. Other people have to show up and make counter-arguments, and they don't do that. So, anyway, I guess we'll talk about, the elements, the foundation, the way of understanding that the very small universe, although, I mean, really the laws that govern the very small universe are the only laws, but they bleed into these much more dense, complicated universe, and they have a similarity, but there's a difference. And so I think some of that needs to be gone over again, so I'll go over it again. Yeah, sort of. Alright, let's see, that's probably good enough. Alright, so you have the basic, you know, the Einstein thought experiment of the rocket ship. And the photon does this, you know, strange thing of falling, okay, on this curved line. But it really doesn't do that, okay? It really doesn't travel this distance. Doesn't travel a longer distance, the photon, okay? You can sort of understand that no matter what the photon is, whether you think of it as a little brick, it flies through space in spots, but it's still doing the same speed this way. So it gets to the other side in the same amount of time. It's not traveling a longer distance. It's traveling the same distance. It's just drifting, okay, in two directions as it's falling. So it's just like throwing something. You know, it can look like that's what it's doing, but you know that it's falling at a constant rate, okay? And, you know, it's just an illusion of a curved line or a longer path. So people do play this game with, like, laser beams. You know, they say, well, look, I could turn a laser beam like this, and I could do it really fast. And at a distance, like the distance to the moon, I would be going many, many times the speed of light. The light beam would be traveling faster than the speed of light, but it really isn't. The photons are. You're just changing their density. And that would be another argument to make, is that the density of the photons would be very low, because obviously if you're not moving the spaceship, all the photons are produced from exactly the same, essentially, a very similar location, and they all land on a similar location, you know, amount of space, a tiny amount of space. And what you're really doing by moving is making the space they land on much bigger, which means there's less density of them, you know, fewer bits hit in different locations. So the real argument is that photons aren't rocks. They are themselves made up of components. And if you're moving the walls of the ship, you're also going to be moving where the components are going to hit and spreading the components out. And so you're going to have much weaker light. By the time it hits the surface, it's going to be a lot less light than it started, in the sense that you've spread it over a much larger distance. So anyway, this is sort of the point I want to get to. All right, so here's the simple description of energy in the universe. So you have the smallest bits of matter, say electrons and protons. And let's just say, for the sake of argument, they have a mass of 1, okay, just to make things simple. They are, let's make it simple. And what you're doing is you're hitting them with a force, okay, that's active. So they're dead pieces of force. You could think of them as that. They're not moving. They don't have any momentum. They have to be pushed wherever they go. And so the idea would be is that you're actually just hitting them with a force. So the active force would just make that solid, okay, hits the dead, all right, then what it's going to do is push it. So if this is going the speed of light, and now the two of them hit each other, you can sort of understand that now this is going one half the speed of light, because you have to spread the momentum over twice the mass. So twice the mass, half the velocity. And then you can understand that if a second one hit, all right, then you would be at 2/3, okay? You know, the speed of light. And you could never get to the speed of light, because no matter how many, you know, no matter how many bits of force I put back here, there's always going to be this dead piece that it has to be diminished by. So it's always going to be some percentage of the total number. Let's say it's a million and I got one dead bit. Well, then it's going to be 1/1,000,000th of a tiny unit of energy short of the speed of light. It's always going to be a little bit short of the speed of light. So that creates your, that mechanically creates your Lorentzian style curve, okay? Where you can never hit the other side. You know, you just keep going parallel to your X or Y axis, and you know, you can never get there. That creates your speed limit. So that's the elemental universe. Now in our big universe, okay, with big matter that's made out of lots of little pieces of matter, the idea would be is that a force hits and it's just about time. So how much time each one of these elements gets pushed. And so you're basically spreading a piece of force, all right, over an element of time. So it's going to hit one, and then a billionth of a second later, it's pushing this one. So it pushes this one for a tiny bit, and then it pushes this one for a tiny bit, and it pushes this one for a tiny bit, and pushes this one for a tiny bit, and pushes. So it pushes all of them, and that adds up to just one little push for all of them over a period of time. So in a period of time, all right, all of them will be moved a tiny bit, and so that's all you get. So the one little force bit over the big mass adds up to a tiny amount of total distance. All right, but obviously it was pushing the whole time, and it, you know, but it can't, obviously all of the, whatever momentum it has to be spread over all of the electrons over a period of time. So it's really just about, in this model, you can sort of understand that if the universe is full of this energy, the only place the energy can come from is the universe. I mean, it's sort of something you could sort of understand that, yes, the universe has to be full of it to create gravity and create all this stuff. The universe has to be doing it because the Earth isn't doing it and the Sun isn't doing it. None of these things are doing it. They're not losing mass. They're not showing any creation of energy. So the energy must be coming from the outside. Like magnets are a good example. You can understand the magnet's not radioactively decaying to create magnetism. So the energy must be coming from the external universe. Well, anyway, so the electron is sitting in that. You can understand that, yes, it goes the speed of light this way, but in a billionth of a second or a trillionth of a second, it hits another piece of energy going the opposite direction. And this momentum is lost, both on the reflect, and it goes back to not moving again. So you can understand the electron's moving very fast, but it doesn't go very far. So in its lowest energy condition, it's jittering a tiny distance, okay, at half the speed of light. So at half the speed of light, that's its minimum motion. It can't go any slower than half the speed of light. That's just saying that the electron has the same mass as the energy bit. We could double it, we could triple it, we could, you know, do lots of things to make its mass heavier and make it capable of moving slower. But I would sort of argue that experiments with charge and linear accelerators and electron guns sort of indicate that you can't make electrons move, you know, 5 miles an hour or 10 miles an hour. They don't do that. They do this jitter thing. They move very fast or not at all. And so basically you're just saying that it's in normal condition, it's just being pushed, you know, one unit of energy at a time. So it's moving very fast, very short distances. And every now and then it gets hit by a little extra from one direction that just means it goes twice as far. So it jitters, you know, it jitters within this range, And every now and then it goes twice that range, okay, to this location. But it always ends up, you know, the laws of averages. So unless you hit it with a constant source of energy, it never goes very far. So you have to keep pumping energy in to keep moving an electron. All right. To keep the jitter, the average, moving in a direction, drifting. So to cause an electron to drift, you have to keep pumping energy in to keep maintaining the higher velocity in a direction. All right. So big matter looks different, but it's basically the same mechanics are causing the effect, but you just have to understand it's being spread over time, and we're really bad at doing time. I mean, we're moving so slowly compared to the subatomic universe. I mean, every thought, every word, everything we do is really, really, really slow compared to how many actions take place in the subatomic level in every moment of our perception. This motion is so slow compared to the speed of light. So that's all, we're being fooled, sort of, by the fact that we can't function at the speed the universe is moving us. Moving the origin of the motion, the place where it happens, the small universe, has a clock rate that's just so much higher than ours is. In terms of what we can understand and see, we can't see it and we can't perceive it, as in the speed is so fast that we just can't see it, we can't perceive it, we can't, you know, it's like even something going a few hundred miles an hour, it's already hard for us to see, okay, let alone something going, you know, 3 million miles an hour. All right. Yeah, so that's probably enough on the board. I'll see if it's worth erasing and saying much more and such. All right, back. In the big world, we have a concept called heat. All right, we consider heat to be atoms, you know, big things, you know, big relatively speaking. How much they're banging into each other, how many times they hit each other, so to speak. Their electrons, you know, bounce off of each other, and we say that's heat, so the motion of the atoms. But the real heat is in the motion of the electrons, because the motion of the electrons is what's moving the atoms, the electrons and the protons. So their heat, okay, is that jittering that they're constantly doing. And the real point would be is that when a piece of matter, okay, a whole big thing, elephant, whatever, is moving, it means the piece of matter has in it, all right, elements that are uneven. Okay, so they're jittering, but they're jittering more in one direction than another. So it's essentially heat with a direction. You can understand that's what motion's made out of. Motion of a big object is just essentially heat in a direction. You're just saying you have more of this banging about, and you're just doing it more in one direction than the other directions. All right, so you're drifting. So it's you could say it's the subatomic drift is motion. And it's just heat. It's just heat in a direction. So when a big object hits another big object, what it's really doing is it just going to exchange its heat direction. So it has a bunch of subatomic particles with an extra little bit of direction. And so if you thought of it as a thermal equation, okay, that's going to transfer its heat, then you'd understand that, so it's about how much time, okay, you spend connected. Because that's the only way you can thermally exchange your heat, is you need time to do it. takes time for the heat to go from one object to another object for it to be transferred. So that's what you're really doing, is taking, you need time for these impacts to, do their thing, to keep pushing enough energy into the other object to make it, to make all of its atoms start moving in this direction. And it happens a little bit at a time. You know, 5 atoms, then 10 atoms, then 20, then 50, then hundreds, of electrons. It takes all those exchanges and it's going to do the same thing. And their point would be is that, because of the difference that the materials can be made out of, they have different friction coefficients. They have different ability to communicate that energy and to get it from one object to another. There are different thermal barriers to how well they can, whether they're insulators, whether they're conductors of heat. And that'll sort of decide how well they can absorb this extra energy, whether it goes right in and just keeps moving almost at the speed of sound in the object is what they find it comes down to. So the speed of sound in the object, which again is, we're back to the atoms. So the atoms have to do the transferring. It can't be electron on electron specifically. Like every electron inside of the atom doesn't communicate with another electron. It's only the surface atom, the surface electrons. So the atoms are a little less efficient at transferring. But they're going to be doing the transferring through the electrons that are doing the contacting. So that's the mechanism. It takes time. And it takes the right material to get this extra arrow from one object to the other object. So in the Newton's cradle, the idea is you have two really compatible objects, the same material, hitting the same material, and then you're basically just, you're exchanging an amount of energy that is the same momentum, the same number of little bits moving at a speed, and it just basically travels. This extra drift arrow just basically goes into this object and just keeps going in until this object has the momentum that this object had. So the heat just moves right in and stays in, and it goes, and there's no interference with that process. And interference would be something like, if the mass is much bigger, then you can get the idea that it can only collect small arrows. All right. And it has to go over a lot more density. So it's going to take more time to go over that bigger density. And it's just not going to have the time. That's probably helpful. So we'll see where else we go. What else might need to be said just to clarify? Alright, so we'll go over there's two ways motion can be manifest in matter. So the first one I'm arguing is that there's a very mechanical one on the subatomic, the electron, proton, independently, individually, as little discrete bits. They have to be essentially constantly pushed. That is, if a piece of energy hits them, it moves them in the direction of that energy until something comes from the other direction, a counter force, so to speak, and then they're stopped. And the idea would be is they would constantly run into more force in the direction they're moving, more impacts, which would mean they would be dragged to a standstill. They can't keep going. They have to be constantly pushed, like by a laser beam or something. They'd have to be constantly supplied more energy to keep moving. But the trick is, when you put these things in arrangements in matter, you create the circumstance where you have the electron. Let's say we have an electron, a proton, and an electron. All right, we'll just make a proton dark so we have a distinction. And the idea is that, yes, there's definite attraction and definite repulsion between the two electrons. So they both attract to the proton. They're both repelled by each other. But the key thing is, if this unit is moving, you could get the idea that energy can hit from this direction, more energy. And that more energy will never get to here. Okay, this electron will absorb those impacts. It will go this direction, which it wants to go anyway, to next to the proton. But the fact is this object will never experience the energy going this way until it actually hits the proton. So it's constantly chasing, attracted to the proton. It never gets any repulsive, energy, that the counterforce. So it's constantly going to be pushing the proton towards the electron, which it wants to do anyway. And so this mechanism ends up being a mechanism that I've described sort of like this, like a bucket. You could throw energy in a space bucket, let's say. You throw a bouncing, perfectly elastic ball into the bucket. It exchanges and creates force in this direction, and it reflects this way. And so the bucket starts moving this way, right? As this is going that way. As the ball's moving this way, the bucket's moving this way, making this distance shorter. And then when it hits the back wall, it's not going to make this wagon go that way. It's just going to make it stop. Okay, it's going to stop. It's not going to go the opposite direction. It's just going to stop, and then the ball's going to reflect again. So it stopped here. And then when the ball reflects, it's going to hit the front surface again. It's going to make it go again. Right? So you can get the idea that the ball bouncing back and forth, because it went in with one direction, just like I could add energy to a rotating object in one direction, the one direction is remembered. Okay, that's the initial energy, is in this, it's in a direction. And because the initial energy is in the direction, all you can do is stop it, and then it goes, and then it stops, and it goes. So you never lose it. And so you keep reinitiating the same process that started the process. You keep reinitiating the ball going this way, start the thing moving again. Okay, and then you can stop it, and then you start it, and you stop it, and then you start it. So this is what matter can make. Matter can make a machine, okay, that keeps going. It collects the energy and keeps the energy moving in a direction. And that's how you overcome drag, is by having one of those kind of little engines. And so that engine would be made out of a neutron, which would be a proton and an electron, and an extra electron. Or the other way around. Okay, a proton, electron in the middle, and a proton. Okay, so that's what atoms are full of, are those two mechanisms. A neutron and an extra proton. That's what a nucleus is made out of, right? That's the percentages. It's net positive because it has twice as many protons, generally speaking, as it has electrons. So that would be the configuration, but it's the same. You can understand it would be the same thing. Either one would work the same way in terms of overcoming drag, making it possible for the elements, okay, to essentially capture the energy and reuse it in a direction. Anyway, so that's a way of understanding why matter can keep moving with just an initial source, an impulse, and it can maintain the impulse, capture it, and keep going, where the elemental bits can't do that because they have to face the drag, and it will drag them to all, it'll take away that impulse energy, it will consume it, where it won't get consumed in this mechanism. All right, so that's probably enough of a video. The underlying argument is that the universe is made out of force and matter, and that there is no relativity besides the, there's no relativity that undoes absolute space. There's three dimensions, physical dimensions, and everything's in a location in the physical dimensions, and it's moving, in the three dimensions. And there's no entanglement, of course, and there's no superpositions, and there is no kinetic energy, there's just momentum. And the force has momentum, Planck's amounts. It has little bits of force, and the same force that makes gravity, makes magnetism, makes electricity, so all the stuff moving the speed of light is exactly, it's all the same stuff, and it's just slightly configured differently. Electron force versus proton force, little bits that are red and little bits that are blue, and things like magnets just separate the red from the blue and create a pattern. And other magnets can see the pattern. But it's all the same force. And the momentum is just derived from the force. The matter is dead. And it has to be pushed by the force. And, so that's the replacement mechanics for the very complicated standard model. And then whenever they see something like a muon, or some other atomic bit, they're really just describing electrons with different amounts of energy behind them. That is, they've been hit by a cosmic ray, let's say, and they're going to behave like a much faster, they're just going to behave differently. Or they can actually be two electrons, okay, moving in the same direction that have some force behind them, but that's in an arrangement. Well, that's probably not the best location for that, right? that the electrons are repelling, so there's force between them repelling, but there's also a bunch of force behind one of them pushing, and so that would be something like a muon. Or it could be one of these machines, So I'd say that most of them are electrons paired with a neutron, or a proton paired with a neutron, and that's what they're really seeing traveling. And that the neutron's hard to detect, so all they're detecting is the extra positive charge or the extra negative charge. So you can understand, like, a linear accelerator is basically collecting charge. So it's saying, here's a target. How much charge are you putting on the target? How many electrons did you hit it with? Well, the fact is, if you hit it with a proton and an electron, that's a nothing. Okay, that's a plus and then a minus, and so they just cancel each other out. So there's no charge added if a neutron hits it. But if the electron hits it, there's the negative charge. So what you're basically saying is that I could hit it with one of these, and you wouldn't be able to detect the neutron hitting, but you would be detecting the electron hitting because the charge would increase. And as I increase, these objects, I'm going to increase the charge, but the more important part is the more energy they have, the more heat I'll create. So the more force they've collected, the more heat they're capable of producing. But the more force I put in here, right now we're back to this argument about speed. If I hit an electron with, one bit of force, it's going half the speed of light. Hit it with two, it's two-thirds. You can understand that half is a lot bigger than two-thirds in terms of the increase. I've only increased it a little bit, one-half of a half, essentially a quarter. And then if I put a fourth and a fifth and a sixth, I'm tiny increases, an eighth and then a sixteenth. And so my increases to energy, even though I've increased it by a full Planck energy unit, I'm not getting it in the velocity. The velocity is not going to show the amount of force that I've added, because it's a tiny percentage of the increase in the speed. So I'm increasing the speed, and at high speeds, once I'm going faster than, 7/8 of the speed of light. Once I'm going faster than that, I can add a lot of energy and only have a tiny increase, just a 1/16 increase in the speed, but I've added a ton of energy to gain that little tiny increase. It took a lot of energy to get that extra increase, and that's the heat that shows up in the linear accelerator. is that what you're really moving are objects that can collect the energy and have this speed limit in the sense that they, the electrons aren't capable of going, they're doing Planck speed. They can't go any speed. They have to go specific speeds based on the number of force bits pushing them, and that they can never catch up to the speed of light. They can only approach it. And the more energy they have, the less increase in speed you'll see. And that's the increase in mass they talk about, but it's really not an increase in mass, it's an increase in weight. Weight is when you're getting pushed by a force. You only have, your mass only has weight when a force is pushing you. Gravity's pushing you, it makes you weigh something on a scale. If I take away gravity, your mass doesn't weigh anything. Because it doesn't have any motion. Doesn't have any force pushing it. Without force pushing it, you have no energy. Alright. That should be enough of a video. So all kind of draft stuff, but these are the underlying arguments that I say the evidence really does point to a mechanical universe based on these principles. And regular physics isn't even really very close to getting it right. It's just a pile of crap, frankly. Very under-evidenced speculation, where I think the evidence does fit this speculation much better. It's a much better fit. So anyway, till the next time and such, this has been DraftPhysics.com, DebatePhysics.com also, but we just can't find any worthy adversary to make the counter arguments. Doesn't seem like that, I like making counter arguments to people's crap, but I can't find anybody. I can't find the Vulcan to my Earth. I can't find the opposite planet to enjoy attempting to dismantle my arguments. Anyway, but till the next time, and such and so forth.